I'm nothing without a sample. A prayer now, and if the words convince me, I will pay a fair price this morning and every morning. I will hope to write it off to sundry expenses. Sundry it is. Shai leaned close to Temple. You wanted a break from riding drag? This could be a steady earner. Give it some belief, lawyer.
All right, Temple muttered back. But if I'm the new priest, I want the old one's boots.
He clambered up onto one of the wagons, makeshift congregation shuffling into an awkward crescent. To Shai's surprise, it was nearly half the fellowship. Nothing moves people to prayer like death, she guessed, and last night's demonstration of God's wrath didn't hurt attendance either. All the Suljuks were there. Lady Ingolstadt, tall and curious, Gentili with his ancient family, Buckhorn with his young one. Most of the whores, and their pimp, too, though Shai had a suspicion he was keeping an eye on his goods rather than moved by love of the Almighty. There was a silence, punctuated only by the scraping of Hedge's knife as he salvaged the dead cattle for meat, and the scraping of Savian's shovel as he put the remains of the fellowship's previous spiritual adviser to rest, without his boots. Temple held one hand in the other and humbly turned his face towards the heavens, deep and clear now, with no trace of last night's fury.
God?
Close, but no.
And at that moment, old Dab Sweet came riding up, reins dangling between two fingers.
Morning, my brave companions.
Where the hell have you been? Called Mahood.
Scouting is what you pay me for, innit?
That, and help in storms.
I can't hold your hand across every mile of the far country. We've been out north,
jerking his thumb over his shoulder.
Out north,
echoed Crying Rock, who had somehow managed to ride into the encampment from the opposite direction in total silence.
Following some ghost signs, trying to guide you clear of any nasty surprises.
Ghost signs? Asked Temple, looking a little sick. Sweet held up a calming hand.
No need for anyone to shit their britches yet. This is the far country. There's always ghosts around. Question is, which ones and how many? We was worried those tracks might belong to some of Sanjeed's people.
And? Asked Corlin.
Before we could get a sight of them, that storm blew in. Best thing we could do was find a rock to shelter by and let it blow along.
Ha ha!
Grunted Crying Rock, presumably in agreement.
You should have been here, grumbled Lord Ingolstadt. Even I can't be everywhere, your lordship. But keep complaining by all means. Scorn is the scout's portion. Everyone's got a better way of doing things, till they're called on to actually tell you what it might be. It was our surmise that among the whole fellowship you'd enough stout hearts and level heads to see it through. Not that I'd count your lordship with either party. And what do you know?
Sweet stuck out his bottom lip and nodded around at the dripping camp and its bedraggled occupants.
Few head of cattle lost, but that was quite a storm last night. Could have been plenty worse.
Shall I get down? Asked Temple.
Not on my account. What are you doing up there, anyhow?
He was about to say the morning prayer, said Shai.
He was? What happened to the other god-tickler? What's his name?
Herd ran over him in the night, said Corlin, without emotion wasted on the fact.
I guess that'll do it.
Sweet reached into his saddlebag and eased out a half-full bottle.
Well then, have at it, lawyer.
And he treated himself to a long swig. Temple sighed and looked at Shai. She shrugged and mouthed, drag, at him. He sighed again and turned his eyes skywards.
God,
he began for a second time,
for reasons best known to yourself, you have chosen to put a lot of bad people in the world, people who would rather steal a thing than make it, who would rather break a thing than grow it, people who will set fire to a thing just to watch it burn. I know. I've run across a few of them. I've ridden with them.
Temple looked down for a moment.
I suppose I've been one of them.
Oh, he's good,
muttered Sweet, handing the bottle to Shai.
She took a taste, making sure it wasn't too deep.
"Perhaps they seem like monsters, these people."
Temple's voice rose high and fell low, hands stroking and plucking and pointing in a fashion Shai had to concede was quite arresting.
"But the truth is, it takes no sorcery to make a man do bad things. Bad company, bad choices, bad luck. A no more than average level of cowardice."
Shai offered the bottle to Lam, but he was fixed so tight to the sermon he didn't notice. Corlin took it instead.
"But gathered here today, humbly seeking your blessing, you see a different kind of people."
Quite a few of them, in fact, as the flock was steadily swelling.
"Not perfect, surely. Each with their faults, some uncharitable."
And Temple gave Mahood a stern look.
"Some prone to drink."
Corlin paused with the bottle halfway to her mouth.
"Some just a little on the grasping side."
His eye fell on Shai, and damn it if she didn't even feel a little shamed for a moment, and that took some heavy doing.
"But every one of these people came out here to make something."
A ripple of agreement went through the fellowship, heads bobbing as they nodded along.
"Every one of them chose to take the hard way, the right way."
He really was good. Shai could hardly believe it was the same man who moaned 10 times a day about dust, pouring out his heart like he'd God's words in him after all.
"To brave the perils of the wilderness so they could build new lives with their hands and their sweat and their righteous effort."
Temple spread his own hands wide to encompass the gathering.
"These are the good people, God. Your children ranged before you, hopeful and persevering. Shield them from the storm. Guide them through the trials of this day and every day."
"Hurrah!"
cried the idiot, leaping up and punching the air. Faith switched smoothly to a new prophet, whooping and capering and shouting,
"Good people! Good people!"
until Corlin caught hold of him and managed to shut him up.
"Good words," said Lam, as Temple hopped down from the wagon. "By the dead, those were some good words."
"Mostly another man's, if I'm honest."
"Well, you surely say 'em like you believe 'em," said Shai. "A few days riding drag, and you'll believe in anything," he muttered.
The congregation was drifting apart, heading to their morning tasks, a couple of them thanking Temple as they moved off to get underway. Mahood was left, lips appraisingly pressed together.
"Convinced?" asked Shai.
The merchant reached into his purse, which wasn't far from a miracle in itself, and pulled out what looked like a 2-mark piece.
"You should have stuck to prayers," he said to Temple. "They're in greater demand than laws out here."
And he flicked the coin spinning into the air, flashing with the morning sun. Temple grinned, reaching out to catch it. Shai snatched it from the air first.
112, she said.
The Practical Thinkers.
"You owe me 102 marks, said Temple, turning over.
He was already awake. He had started waking before dawn lately, ready the moment his eyes came open.
"That's right. Get up, you're wanted." "I've always had that effect on women. It's a curse. For them, no doubt."
Temple sighed as he started to roll up his blanket. He was a little sore, but it would wear off. He was getting hard from the work, tough in places that had been soft a long time. He had been obliged to tighten his belt by a couple of notches. Well, not notches exactly, but he had twice shifted the bent nail that served for a buckle in the old saddle girth that served for a belt.
"Don't tell me," he said. "I'm riding drag."
"No. Once you've led the fellowship in prayer, Lamb's lending you his horse. You're coming hunting with me and Sweet today."
"Do you have to taunt me like this every morning?" he asked as he pulled his boots on. "What happened to make you this way?"
She stood looking at him, hands on hips. "Sweet found a stretch of timber over yonder, and reckons there might be game. If you'd rather ride drag, you can ride drag. Thought you might appreciate the break is all, but have it your way." And she turned and started to walk off.
"Wait, you're serious?"
Trying to hurry after her and pull on his other boot at the same time.
"Would I toy with your feelings? I'm going hunting."
Sophine had asked him to go hunting 100 times, and he had always said he could not imagine anything more boring. After a few weeks with the dust, had he been the quarry, he would have dashed off laughing across the plains.
"Calm down," said Shy. "No one's fool enough to give you a bow. Me and Sweet'll do the shooting, while Crying Rock scares up the game. You and Leaf can follow on and skin, butcher, and cart. Wouldn't be a bad idea to grab some wood for a shitless fire or two, either."
"Skinning, butchering, and shitless fires. Yes, my queen."
He remembered those few months butchering cattle in the sweltering meat district of Nagoska, the stink and the flies, the back-breaking effort and horrible clamour. He had thought it like hell. Now he dropped to his knees and grabbed her hand and kissed it in thanks for the chance. She jerked it free.
"Stop embarrassing yourself."
It was still too dark to see her face, but he thought he could hear a smile in her voice. She slid her sheathed knife from her belt.
"You'll need this. A knife of my own, and quite a large one."
He stayed on his knees and thrust his fists into the sky.
"I'm going hunting!"
One of Gentili's venerable cousins, on his way shambling past to empty his bladder, shook his head and grumbled,
"Who gives a fuck?"
As the first signs of dawn streaked the sky and the wheels of the fellowship began to turn, the five of them rode off across the scrubby grass, Leaf on an empty wagon for carrying the carcasses, Temple trying to persuade Lamb's horse that they were on the same side. They crested the edge of what passed for a valley out here, but would barely have qualified as a ditch anywhere else, some ill-looking trees huddling in its base, browned and broken. Sweet sat slumped in his saddle, scanning those unpromising woods. God only knew what for.
"Look about right,"
he grunted to Crying Rock.
"About."
The ghost gave her old grey a tap with her heels, and they were off down the long slope. The lean deer that came bouncing from the trees and straight into Sweet's bolts and Shy's arrows were a different prospect from the big soft oxen that had swung from the hooks in Dagoska's stinking warehouses, but the principles came back quickly enough. Soon, Temple was making a few swift slits with the blade, then peeling the skins off whole, while Leaf held the front hooves. He even took a sprinkling of pride in the way he got the gut sliding out in one mass, steaming in the chill morning. He showed Leaf the trick of it, and soon they were bloody to their elbows, and laughing, and flicking bits of gut at each other like a pair of boys. Soon enough, they had 5 tough little carcasses stretched out and glistening in the back of the wagon, and the last, skinned and headed, the offal in a fly-blown heap, and the hides in a red and brown tangle, like clothes discarded by a set of eager swimmers. Temple wiped Shy's knife on one of them and nodded off up the rise.
"I'd best see what's keeping those two. I'll get this last one gutted."
Leaf grinned up at him as he dragged himself onto Lamb's horse.
"Thanks for the pointers. Teaching is the noblest of callings, Hadish Kadia used to tell me."
"Who's he?" Temple thought about that.
"A good, dead man who gave his life for mine."
"Sounds like a shitty trade," said Leaf.
Temple snorted.
"Even I think so. I'll be back before you know it."
He pushed up the valley, following the tree line, enjoying the turn of speed he got from Lamb's horse, and congratulating himself that he was finally making some progress with that boy. 100 strides further on, and he saw Sweet and Shy watching the trees from horseback.
"Can't you sluggards kill any faster?" he called at them.
"You finished that lot already?" asked Shy.
"Skinned, gutted, and eager for the pot."
"I'll be damned," grunted Sweet,
ivory-stocked flat bow propped on his thigh.
"Reckon someone who knows the difference better check up on the lawyer's handiwork. Make sure he hasn't skinned Leaf by mistake."
Shy brought her horse around, and they rode back towards the wagon.
"Not bad," she said, giving him an approving nod. It might well have been the first he had received from her, and he found he quite liked having one. "Reckon we might make a plainsman of you yet. That, or I'll make snivelling townsfolk of the lot of you. Take stronger stuff than you're made of to get that done. I'm made of pretty weak stuff, all in all."
"I don't know." She was looking sideways at him, one appraising brow up. "I'm starting to think there might be some metal under all that paper." He tapped his chest with a fist. "Tin, maybe." "Well, you wouldn't forge a sword from it, but tin'll make a decent bucket. Or a bath." She closed her eyes.
"By the dead, a bath."
"Or a roof."
"By the dead, a roof."
As they crested the rise and looked down towards the trees.
"Can you remember what a roof?"
The wagon came into view below, and the heap of skins, and next to them, Leaf lying on the ground. Temple knew it was him because of his boots. He couldn't see the rest because two figures knelt over him. His first thought was that the lad must have had a fall, and the other two were helping him up. Then one turned towards them, and he was dressed in a dozen different skins, all patchwork stitched, and carried a red knife. He gave a hellish shriek, tongue sticking stiff from his yawning mouth, high and heedless as a wolf at the moon, and started to bound up the slope towards them. Temple could only sit and gawp as the ghost rushed closer until he could see the eyes bulging in his red-painted face. Then Shai's bowstring hummed just by his ear, and the arrow flickered across the few strides between them and into the ghost's bare chest, stopped him cold like a slap in the face. Temple's eyes darted to the other ghost, standing now in a cloak of grass and bones, slipping his own bow off his back and reaching for an arrow from a skin quiver tied to his bare leg. Shai rode down the hill, giving a scream hardly more human than the ghost's had been, tugging out that short sword she wore. The ghost got his arrow free, then spun around and sat down. Temple looked over to see Sweet lowering his flat bow.
"There'll be more!"
he shouted, hooking the stirrup on the end of his bow over one boot and hauling the string back with one hand, turning his horse with a twitch of the other and scanning the tree line. The ghost tried to lift his arrow and fumbled it, tried to reach for another, couldn't straighten his arm because of the bolt in it. He screamed something at Shai as she rode up, and she hit him across the face with her sword and sent him tumbling. Temple spurred down the slope after her and slid from his saddle near Leaf. One of the boy's legs kicked as if he was trying to get up. Shai leaned over him, and he touched her hand and opened his mouth, but only blood came. Blood from his mouth and from his nose, and from the jagged leavings where his ear used to be, and the knife cuts in his arms, and the arrow wound in his chest. Temple stared down, hands twitching in dumb helplessness.
"Get him on your horse!"
snarled Shai, and Temple came alive of a sudden and seized Leaf under his arms. Crying Rock had come from somewhere and was beating the ghost Shai had shot with a club. Temple could hear the crunching of it as he started dragging Leaf towards his horse, stumbled and fell, struggled up and on again.
"Leave him!"
shouted Sweet.
"He's all done! A fool can see it!"
Temple ignored him, teeth gritted, trying to haul Leaf up onto the horse by belt and bloody shirt. For a skinny lad, he was quite the weight.
"Not leaving him,"
hissed Temple.
"Not leaving him. Not leaving him."
The world was just him and Leaf and the horse, just his aching muscles and the boy's dead weight and his mindless bubbling groan. He heard the hooves of Sweet's horse thumping away, heard shouting in no language he knew, voices hardly human. Leaf lolled and slipped, and the horse shifted. Then Shai was there next to him, growling in her throat, effort and fear and anger, and together they hauled Leaf up over the saddle horn, broken arrow shaft sticking black into the air. Temple's hands were covered in blood. He stood looking at them for a moment.
"Go!" shrieked Shai. "Go, you fucking idiot!"
He scrambled into the saddle, fumbling for the reins with sticky fingers, hammering with his heels, almost falling off, as his horse, Lamb's horse, leapt into life, and he was riding, riding, wind whipping in his face, whipping the garbled shouting from his mouth, whipping the tears from his eyes. The flat horizon bounced and shuddered, and Leaf jolted over the saddle horn, sweet and crying rock, two wriggling specks against the sky. Shy up ahead, bent low over the saddle, tail of her horse streaming, and she snatched to look behind, and he saw the fear in her face. Didn't want to look, had to look. There they were at his heels like messengers from hell. Painted faces, painted horses, childishly daubed and stuck with skins, feathers, bones, teeth, and one with a human hand dried and shrunken bouncing around his neck, and one with a headdress made of bull's horns, and one wearing a great copper dish as a breastplate, shining and flashing with the afternoon sun, a mess of flying red and yellow hair, and brandished weapons, hooked and beaked and jagged-edged, all screaming furiously, and fixed on his most horrible murder, and Temple went freezing cold right into his arse.
"Oh God, oh God, oh fuck, oh God!"
His brainless swearing drumming away like the hooves of his horse, Lamb's horse, and an arrow flickered past and into the grass. Shai screamed at him over her shoulder, but the words were gone in the wind. He clung to the reins, clung to the back of Leaf's shirt, his breath whooping and his shoulders itching, and knowing for sure that he was a dead man, and worse than dead, and all he could think was that he should have ridden drag after all. Should have stayed on the hill above Avostok, should have stepped forward when the Gurkish came for Cardia, instead of standing in that silent, helpless line of shame with all the others. Then he saw movement up ahead, and realized it was the Fellowship, shapes of wagons and cattle on the flat horizon, riders coming out to meet them. He glanced over his shoulder, and saw the ghosts were dropping back, peeling away. Could hear their whooping calls, one of them sending an arrow looping towards him and falling well short, and he sobbed with relief, had just the presence of mind left to rein in as he came close, his horse, Lamb's horse, quivering almost as much as he was. Chaos among the wagons, panic spreading as if there had been 600 ghosts instead of 6, Luline Buckhorn screaming for a missing child. Gentili, all tangled up with a rust-stained breastplate even older than he was, a couple of cattle loose and charging through the midst, and Mahood, standing on his wagon seat and yelling demands for calm no one could hear.
"What happened?" growled Lamb, steady as ever, and Temple could only shake his head. No words in him. Had to force his aching hand open to let go of Leaf's shirt as Lamb slid him from the horse and lowered him to the ground.
"Where's Colin?"
Shai was shouting, and Temple slithered from the saddle, legs numb as two dry sticks. Lamb was cutting Leaf's shirt, fabric ripping under the blade, and Temple leaned down, wiping the blood away from the arrow shaft, wiping the blood. But as soon as he wiped it, there was more, Leaf's body all slick with it.
"Give me the knife!"
snapping his fingers, and Lamb pushed it into his hand, and he stared at that arrow. What to do? What to do? Pull it out, or cut it out, or push it through? And trying to remember what Cardia had told him about arrow wounds, something about what the best chance was. The best chance. But he couldn't fix on anything, and Leaf's eyes were crossed, his mouth hanging open, and his hair all matted with blood. Shai scrambled down next to him and said,
"Leaf! Leaf!"
And Lamb gently laid him flat, and Temple stuck the knife in the earth and rocked back on his heels. They came to him then in a strange rush, all the things he knew about the boy. That he'd been in love with Shai, and that Temple had been starting to win him round, that he'd lost his parents, that he'd been trying to find his brother stolen by bandits, that he'd been a good man with oxen and a hard worker.
but all that now was hacked off in the midst, and would never be resolved. All his dreams and hopes and fears ended here on the trampled grass, and cut out from the world forever. Hell of a thing. Savion was roaring and coughing and pointing everywhere with his flat bow, trying to get the wagons dragged into some kind of fort, with barrels and clothes chests and rope coils stacked up to hide behind, the cattle corralled inside, and the women and children to the safest place, though Shai had no notion where that might be. Folk were scrambling about like the idea of ghosts had never been discussed before, running to do what they were told, or exactly what they hadn't been, to tug at stubborn animals, or find stowed weapons, or save their gear, or their children, or just to stare and clutch at themselves like they were stabbed and their ears off already. Yosef Lestek's big wagon had run into a ditch, and a couple of men were struggling to rock it free.
"Leave it!" shouted Savion. "We ain't gonna act our way out of this!"
And they left it colorfully advertising the world's finest theatrical entertainment to the empty plains. Shai shouldered her way through the madness and up onto Mahood's wagon. Away to the south, across the waving, shifting grass, three ghosts rode around in circles, one shaking a horned lance at the sky, and Shai thought she could hear them singing, high and joyful. Sweet watched, his loaded flat bow propped on one knee, rubbing at his bearded jaw, and it felt like there was a small piece of calm around him she gratefully squatted in.
"How's the boy?"
"Dad," said Shai, and it made her sick that was all she had to say.
"Ah, damn it."
Sweet gave a bitter grimace and closed his eyes and pressed them with finger and thumb.
"Damn it."
Then he trained them on the mounted ghosts on the horizon, shaking his head.
"Best fix ourselves on making sure the rest of us don't go the same way."
Savion's cracked voice shouted on, and all around folk were clambering onto the wagons with bows in unpracticed hands, new ones never drawn with purpose, and antiques long out of service.
"What are they singing of?"
asked Shai, pulling an arrow from her quiver and slowly turning it round and round, feeling the roughness against her fingertips like wood was a new thing never felt before. Sweet snorted.
"Our violent demise. They reckon it's near at hand."
"Is it?"
she couldn't help asking.
"Depends."
Sweet's jaw muscles worked under his beard, then he slowly, calmly spat.
"On whether those three are some of Sanjeed's main warband, or he's split it up into smaller parties."
"And which is it?"
"Guess we can count 'em when they arrive, and if there's a few dozen, we'll know we've a chance, and if there's a few hundred, we'll have our profound fucking doubts."
Buck Horm had clambered up on the wagon, a mail shirt flapping at his thighs that suited him even worse than it fitted him.
"Why are we just waiting?"
he hissed. The ghosts chased his stutter away for now.
"Why don't we move?"
Sweet turned his slow grey eyes on him.
"Move where? Ain't no castles nearby."
He looked back to the plains, empty in every direction, and the three ghosts circling at the edge of that shallow valley, faint singing keening across the empty grass.
"One patch of nowhere's as good to die on as another. Our time's better spent getting ready for what's coming than running from it."
Lamb stood tall on the next wagon. He'd built up quite the collection of knives the last few weeks, and now he was checking them one by one, calm, as if he was getting ready to plough a field back on the farm, instead of fight for his life in wild and lawless country. More than calm, now Shai thought about it, like it was a field he'd long dreamed of ploughing, but was only now getting the chance at.
"Who are you?"
she said. He looked up from his blades for a moment.
"You know me."
"I know a big, soft Northman scared to whip a mule. I know a beggar turned up to our farm in the night to work for crusts. I know a man used to hold my brother and sing when he had the fever. You ain't that man."
"I am."
He stepped across the gap between the wagons, and he put his arms around her, crushing tight, and she heard him whisper in her ear,
"But that's not all I am. Stay out of my way, Shy."
Then he hopped down from the wagon.
"You'd better keep her safe," he called to Sweet. "You're joking?"
The old scout was busy sighting down his bow.
"I'm counting on her to save me."
Just then, Crying Rock gave a high shout and pointed off to the south, and over the crest they boiled, as if from some nightmare, relics of a savage age long past, toothed with 100 jagged stolen blades and chipped stone axes and sharp arrows glinting, and a lifetime of laughed-at stories of massacre came boiling with them and stole Shai's breath.
"We're all going to lose our ears,"
someone whimpered.
"Ain't like you use 'em now, is it?"
Sweet leveled his flat bow with a grim smile.
"Looks like a few dozen to me."
Shy knelt there trying to count them, but some horses had other horses painted on their sides, and some had no riders, and some had two, or carried scarecrow figures made to look like men, and others flapping canvas stretched on sticks to make them giants, bloated like bodies drowned, all swimming and blurring before her leaking eyes, mindless and deadly and unknowable as a plague. Shy thought she could hear Temple praying. She wished she knew how.
"Easy!"
Savian was shouting.
"Easy!"
Shy hardly knew what he meant. One ghost wore a hood crusted with fragments of broken glass that sparkled like jewels, mouth yawning in a spit-string scream.
"Stand and live! Run and die!"
She'd always had a knack for running, and no stomach for standing, and if there'd ever been a time to run, her whole body was telling her that time was now.
"Under that fucking paint, they're just men!"
A ghost stood in his or her or its stirrups and shook a feathered lance, naked but for paint and a necklace of ears bouncing and swinging around its neck.
"Stand together or die alone!"
roared Savian, and one of the whores, whose name Shy had forgotten, stood with a bow in her hand and her yellow hair stirred by the wind, and she nodded to Shy, and Shy nodded back. Goldie. That was it. Stand together. That's why they call it a fellowship, ain't it? The first bowstring went, panicky and pointless, arrow falling well short. Then more, and Shy shot her own, barely picking out one target, there were so many. Arrows flickered down and fell among the waving grass and the heaving flesh, and here or there a shape tumbled from a saddle or a horse veered. The ghost with the hood slumped back, Savian's bolt through its painted chest, but the rest swarmed up to the feeble ring of wagons and swallowed it whole, whirling and rearing and sending up a murk of dust, until they and their painted horses were phantoms indeed, their screams and shrieks and animal howls disembodied and treacherous as the voices a madman hears. Arrows dropped around Shy, zip and clatter as one tumbled from a crate, another lodged in a sack just beside her, a third left trembling in the wagon seat. She knocked a shaft and shot again, and again, and again, shot at nothing, at anything, crying with fear and anger, and her teeth crushed together, and her ears full of joyous wailing and her own spat curses. Lestek's mired wagon was a hump with shapes crawling over it, hacking it with axes, stabbing it with spears, like hunters that had brought down some great beast. A pony stuck with arrows tottered sideways past, biting at its neighbor, and, while Shy stared at it, a ragged shape came hurtling over the side of the wagon. She saw just a bulging eye in a face red-painted like an eye, and she grabbed at it, her finger in a mouth and ripping at a cheek, and together they tumbled off the wagon, rolling in the dust. There were strong hands around her head, lifting it and twisting it, while she snarled and tried to find her knife, and suddenly her head burst with light, and the world was quiet and strange, all shuffling feet and choking dust, and she felt a burning, ripping pain under her ear, and she screamed and thrashed and bit at nothing but couldn't get free. Then the weight was off, and she saw Temple wrestling with the ghost, both gripping a red knife, and she clambered up, slow as corn growing, fumbled her sword free, and took a step through the rocking world and stabbed the ghost. Realized it was Temple she'd stabbed, they were so tangled. She caught the ghost around the throat and clutched him close and pushed the sword into his back, dragged at it and shoved at it, scraping on bone until she had it all the way into him, hand slippery hot. Arrows fluttered down, gentle as butterflies, and fell among the cattle, and they snorted their upset, some feathered and bloodied. They jostled unhappily at each other, and one of Gentili's old cousins knelt on the ground with two arrows in his side, one dangling broken.
"There! There!"
And she saw something slithering in under the wagon, a clawing hand, and she stomped on it with her boot and nearly fell, and one of the miners was beside her hacking with a shovel, and some of the whores stabbing at something with spears, screaming and stabbing like they were chasing a rat. Shy caught sight of a gap between the wagons, and beyond the ghosts flooding up on foot in a gibbering crowd, and she heard Temple breathe something in some tongue of his own, and a woman near her moan. Or was it her voice? The heart went out of her, and she took a cringing step back, as though an extra stride of mud would be a shield. All thoughts of standing far in a vanished past, as the first ghost loomed up, an antique greatsword brown with rust clutched in painted fists, and a man's skull worn over its face as a mask. Then, with a roar that was half a laugh, Lamb was in their midst, twisted face a grinning mockery of the man she knew, more horrible to her than any mask a ghost might wear. His swung sword was a blur, and the skull face burst in a spray of black, body sagging like an empty sack. Savian was stabbing from a wagon with a spear, stabbing into the shrieking mass, and Crying Rock beating with her club, and others cutting at them and mouthing curses in every language in the circle of the world, driving them back, driving them out. Lamb swung again and folded a ragged shape in half, kicked the corpse away, opened a great wound in her back, white splinters in red, hacking and chopping, and he lifted a wriggling ghost and dashed its head against the rim of a barrel. Shai knew she should help, but instead she sat down on a wagon wheel and was sick, while Temple watched her, lying on his side, clutching at his rump where she'd stabbed him. She saw Corlin stitching up a cut in Mahood's leg, thread in her teeth, cool as ever, though with sleeves red-speckled to the elbow from the wounds she'd tended. Savian was already shouting out, voice gravelly hoarse, to close up the wagons, plug that gap, toss the bodies out, show 'em they were ready for more. Shai didn't reckon she was ready for more. She sat with hands braced against her knees to stop everything from shaking, blood tickling at the side of her face, sticky in her hair, staring at the corpse of the ghost she'd killed. They were just men, like Savian said. Now she got a proper look. She saw this one was a boy, no older than Leif. No older than Leif had been. Five of the fellowship were killed. Gentili's cousin shot with arrows, and two of Buckhorn's children found under a wagon with their ears cut off, and one of the whores had been dragged away, and no one knew how or when. There weren't many who didn't have some cuts or scrapes, and none who wouldn't start when they heard a wolf howl for all their days. Shai couldn't make her hands stop trembling, ear burning where the ghost had made a start at claiming it for a prize. She wasn't sure whether it was just a nick, or if her ear was hanging by a flap, and hardly dared find out. But she had to get up. She thought of Pitt and Roe out in the far wilderness, scared as she was, and that put the heat into her, and got her teeth gritted and her legs moving, and she growled as she dragged herself up onto Mahood's wagon. She'd half expected the ghosts would have vanished, drifted away like smoke on the wind, but they were there, still of this world and this time, even if Shai could hardly believe it, milling in chaos or rage away across the grass, singing and wailing to each other, Steel still winking.
"Kept your ears, then?"
asked Sweet, and frowned as he pressed his thumb against the cut and made her wince.
"Just about."
"They'll be coming again,"
she muttered, forcing herself to look at those nightmare shapes.
"Maybe, maybe not. They're just testing us, figuring whether they want to give us a proper try."
Savion clambered up beside him, face set even harder and eyes even narrower than usual.
"If I was them, I wouldn't stop until we were all dead."
Sweet kept staring out across the plain. Seemed he was a man made for that purpose.
"Luckily for us, you ain't them. Might look a savage, but he's a practical thinker, your average ghost. They get angry quick, but they hold no grudges. We prove hard to kill, more than likely they'll try to talk, get what they can by way of meat and money, and move on to easier pickings."
"We can buy our way out of this?" asked Shai.
"Ain't much God's made can't be bought out of if you've got the coin," said Sweet, and added in a mutter, "I hope."
"And once we've paid," growled Savion, "what's to stop them following on and killing us when it suits?"
Sweet shrugged.
"You wanted predictable, you should have stayed in Starikland. This here is the Far Country."
And at that moment, the axe-scarred door of Lestek's wagon banged open, and the noted actor himself struggled out in his nightshirt, roomy eyes wild and sparse white hair in disarray.
"Bloody critics!"
he boomed, shaking an empty can at the distant ghosts.
"It will be all right," Temple said to Buckhorn's son. His second son, he thought, not one of the dead ones.
Of course not one of them, because it would not be all right for them. They already had lost everything. That thought was unlikely to comfort their brother, though, so Temple said, "It will be all right," again, and tried to make it earnest, though the painful pounding of his heart, not to mention of his wounded buttock, made his voice wobble. It sounds funny, a wounded buttock. It is not.
"It will be all right," he said, as if the emphasis made it a cast-iron fact.
He remembered Cardia saying the same to him when the siege had begun and the fires burned all across Dagoska, and it was painfully clear that nothing would be all right. It had helped to know that someone had the strength to tell the lie. So Temple squeezed the shoulder of Buckhorn's second son and said,
"It will be all right."
His voice surer this time, and the boy nodded, and Temple felt stronger himself that he could give strength to someone else. He wondered how long that strength would last when the ghosts came again. Buckhorn thrust his shovel into the dirt beside the graves. He still wore his old chainmail shirt, still with the buckles done up wrong, so it was twisted at the front, and he wiped his sweaty forehead with the back of his hand, and left a smear of dirt across it.
"It'd mean a lot to us if you'd say something."
Temple blinked at him.
"Would it?"
But perhaps worthwhile words could come from worthless mouths after all. The great majority of the Fellowship were busy strengthening the defences, such as they were, or staring at the horizon while they chewed their fingernails bloody, or too busy panicking about the great likelihood of their own deaths to concern themselves with anyone else's. In attendance about the five mounds of earth were Buckhorn, his stunned and blinking wife, and their remaining brood of eight, who ranged from sorrow to terror to uncomprehending good humour, two of the whores and their pimp, who had been nowhere to be seen during the attack, but had at least emerged in time to help with the digging, Gentili and two of his cousins, and Shai, frowning down at the heaped earth over Leif's grave, shovel gripped white-knuckle hard in her fists. She had small hands, Temple noticed suddenly, and felt a strange welling of sympathy for her.
Or perhaps that was just self-pity. More than likely the latter.
God!
He croaked, and had to clear his throat.
It seems, sometimes, that you are not out here.
It had mostly seemed to Temple, with all the blood and waste that he had seen, that he was not anywhere.
But I know you are,
he lied. He was not paid for the truth.
You are everywhere, around us, and in us, and watching over us.
Not doing much about it, mind you, but that was God for you.
I ask you, I beg you, watch over these boys, buried in strange earth, under strange skies. These men and women, too. You know they had their shortcomings, but they set out to make something in the wilderness.
Temple felt the sting of tears himself, had to bite his lip for a moment, look to the sky, and blink them back.
Take them to your arms, and give them peace. There are none more deserving.
They stood in silence for a while, the wind tugging at the ragged hem of Temple's coat and snatching Shai's hair across her face. Then Buckhorn held out his palm, coins glinting there.
Thank you.
Temple closed the drover's calloused hand with both of his. My honor to do it. Words did nothing. The children were still dead. He would not take money for that, whatever his debts. The light was starting to fade when Sweet swung down from Mahood's wagon, the sky pinking in the west, and streaks of black cloud spread across it like breakers on a calm sea.
They want to talk, he shouted. They've lit a fire halfway to their camp, and they're waiting for word.
He looked pretty damn pleased about it. Probably Temple should have been pleased, but he was sitting near Leif's grave, weight uncomfortably shifted off his throbbing buttock, feeling as if nothing would ever please him again.
Now they want to talk, said Luline Buckhorn bitterly. Now my two boys are dead.
Sweet winced.
Better than when all your boys are. I'd best go out there.
I'll be coming,
said Lamb, dry blood still speckled on the side of his face.
And me, said Savian. Make sure those bastards don't try anything.
Sweet combed at his beard with his fingers.
Fair enough. Can't hurt to show 'em we've got iron in us.
I will be going too.
Mahood limped up, grimacing badly, so that gold tooth glinted, trouser leg flapping where Corlin had cut it free of his wound.
I swore never to let you negotiate in my name again.
You bloody won't be going, said Sweet. Things tend sour, we might have to run, and you're running nowhere.
Mahood ventured some weight on his injured leg, grimaced again, then nodded over at Shai.
She goes in my place, then.
Me, she muttered, looking over.
Talk to those fuckers. There is no one else I trust to bargain. My partner Kernsbeck would insist on the best price.
I could get to dislike Kernsbeck without ever having met the man.
Sweet was shaking his head.
Sanjeed won't take much to a woman being there.
It looked to Temple as though that made up Shai's mind.
If he's a practical thinker, he'll get over it. Let's go.
They sat in a crescent about their crackling fire, maybe 100 strides from the Fellowship's makeshift fort, the flickering lights of their own camp dim in the distance. The ghosts. The terrible scourge of the plains, the fabled savages of the far country. Shai tried her best to stoke up a towering hatred for them, but when she thought of Leif cold under the dirt, all she felt was sick at the waste of it, and worried for his brother and hers, who were still lost as ever, and worn through and chewed up and hollowed out. That, and now she saw them sitting tame with no death cries or shook weapons, she'd rarely seen so wretched-looking a set of men, and she'd spent a good stretch of her life in desperate straits, and most of the rest bone-poor. They wore half-cured hides and ragged skins,
and threadbare fragments of a dozen different scavenged costumes, the bare skin showing, stretched pale and hungry tight over the bone. One was smiling, maybe at the thought of the riches they were soon to win, and he'd but one rotten tooth in his head. Another frowned solemnly under a helmet made from a beaten-out copper kettle, spout sticking from his forehead. Shai took the old ghost in the center for the great Sanjeed. He wore a cloak of feathers over a tarnished breastplate, looked like it had made some general of the empire proud 1,000 years ago. He had 3 necklaces of human ears, proof, she supposed, of his great prowess, but he was long past his best. She could hear his breathing, wet and crackly, and one half of his leathery face sagged, the drooping corner of his mouth glistening with stray spit. Could these ridiculous little men and the monsters that had come screaming for them on the plain be the same flesh? A lesson she should have remembered from her own time as a fearsome bandit. Between the horrible and pitiful, there's never much of a divide, and most of that is in how you look at it. If anything, it was the old men on her side of the fire that scared her more now. Deep-lined faces made devilish strangers by the shifting flames, eyes gleaming in chill-shadowed sockets, the head of the bolt in Savian's loaded flatbow coldly glistening, Lamb's face bent and twisted like a weather-worn tree, etched with old scars, no clue to his thoughts, not even to her, who'd known him all these years. Especially not to her, maybe. Sweet bowed his head and said a few words in the ghost's tongue, making big gestures with his arms. Sanjeed said a few back, slow and grinding, coughed, and managed a few more.
"Just exchanging pleasantries," Sweet explained.
"Ain't nothing pleasant about this," snapped Shai. "Let's get done and get back."
"We can talk in your words,"
said one of the ghosts, in a strange sort of common, like he had a mouthful of gravel. He was a young one, sitting closest to Sanjeed and frowning across the fire. His son, maybe.
"My name is Lokwe."
"All right."
Sweet cleared his throat.
"Here's a right fucking fuck-up then, ain't it, Lokwe? There was no call for no one to die here. Now look, corpses on both sides, just to get to where we could have started if you'd just said how do."
"Every man takes his life in his hands who trespasses upon our lands," said Lokwe.
Looked like he took himself mighty seriously, which was quite the achievement for someone wearing a ripped-up pair of old Union cavalry trousers with a beaver pelt over the crotch. Sweet snorted.
"I was riding these plains long before you was sucking tit, lad. And now you're going to tell me where I can ride?"
He curled his tongue and spat into the fire.
"Who gives a shit who rides where?" snapped Shai. "Ain't like it's land any sane man would want."
The young ghost frowned at her.
"She has a sour tongue. Fuck yourself."
"Enough," growled Savian. "If we're going to deal, let's deal and go."
Lokwe gave Shai a hard look, then leaned to speak to Sanjeed, and the so-called Emperor of the Plains mulled his words over for a moment, then croaked a few of his own.
5,000s of your silver marks," said Lokwe, "and 20 of cattle, and 20 of horses, and you leave with your ears. That is the word of dread Sanjeed."
And the old ghost lifted his chin and grunted.
"You can have 2,000, said Shai. 3,000 then, and the animals."
His haggling was almost as piss-weak as his clothes.
"My people agreed to 2. That's what you're getting. Far as cattle go, you can have the dozen you were fool enough to make meat of with your arrows, that's all. The horses, no."
"Then perhaps we will come and take them," said Lokwe.
"You can come and fucking try."
His face twisted and he opened his mouth to speak, but Sanjeed touched his shoulder and mumbled a few words, looking all the time at Sweet. The old scout nodded to him, and the young ghost sourly worked his mouth.
"Great Sanjeed accepts your offering."
Sweet rubbed his hands on his crossed legs and smiled.
All right, then. Good.
Sanjeed broke out in a lopsided grin.
We are agreed, said Lokwe, no smile of his own.
All right, said Chai, though she took no pleasure in it.
She was worn down to a nub, just wanted to sleep. The ghost stirred, relaxing a little, the one with the rotten tooth grinning wider than ever. Lam slowly stood, the sunset at his back, a towering piece of black with the sky all bloodstained about him.
I've a better offer, he said.
Sparks whirled about his flicking heels as he jumped the fire. There was a flash of orange steel, and Sanjeed clutched his neck, toppling backwards. Savian's bowstring went, and the ghost with the kettle fell, bolt through his mouth. Another leapt up, but Lam buried his knife in the top of his head with a crack like a log splitting. Lokwe scrambled to his feet, just as Shai was doing the same, but Savian dived and caught him around the neck, rolling over onto his back and bringing the ghost with him, thrashing and twitching, a hatchet in his hand, but pinned helpless, snarling at the sky.
"What are you doing?"
called Sweet, but there wasn't much doubt by then. Lam was holding up the last of the ghosts with one fist and punching him with the other, knocking out the last couple of teeth, punching him so fast Shai could hardly tell how many times, whipping sound of his arm inside his sleeve and his big fist crunching, crunching, and the black outline of the ghost's face losing all shape, and Lam tossed his body fizzling in the fire. Sweet took a step back from the shower of sparks.
Fuck!
His hands tangled in his grey hair like he couldn't believe what he was seeing. Shai could hardly believe it either, cold all over and sitting frozen, each breath whooping a little in her throat, Lokwe snarling and struggling still, but caught tight in Savian's grip as a fly in honey. Sanjeed tottered up, one hand clutching at his chopped-open throat, clawing fingers shining with blood. He had a knife, but Lam stood waiting for it, and caught his wrist as though it was a thing ordained, and twisted it, and forced Sanjeed down on his knees, drooling blood into the grass. Lam planted one boot in the old ghost's armpit, and drew his sword with a faint ringing of steel, paused a moment to stretch his neck one way and the other, then lifted the blade and brought it down with a thud. Then another, and Lam let go of Sanjeed's limp arm, reached down and took his head by the hair, a misshapen thing now, split open down one cheek, where one of Lam's blows had gone wide of the mark.
This is for you,
he said, and tossed it in the young ghost's lap. Lokwe stared at it, chest heaving against Savian's arm, a strip of tattoo showing below the old man's rucked-up sleeve. The ghost's eyes moved from the head to Lam's face, and he bared his teeth and hissed out,
"We will be coming for you! Before dawn, in the darkness, we will be coming for you!" "No."
Lam smiled, his teeth and his eyes and the blood streaked down his face, all shining with the firelight.
"Before dawn."
He squatted in front of Lokwe, still held helpless.
"In the darkness."
He gently stroked the ghost's face, the three fingers of his left hand leaving three black smears down pale cheek.
"I'll be coming for you."
They heard sounds out there in the night, talking at first, muffled by the wind. People demanded to know what was being said, and others hissed at them to be still. Then Temple heard a cry and clutched at Corlin's shoulder. She brushed him off.
"What's happening?"
demanded Lestek.
"How can we know?"
snapped Mahood back. They saw shadows shifting around the fire, and a kind of gasp went through the fellowship.
"It's a trap!"
shouted Lady Ingolstadt, and one of the Suljuk started yammering in words not even Temple could make sense of. A spark of panic, and there was a general shrinking back, in which Temple was ashamed to say he took a willing part.
"They should never have gone out there!"
croaked Hedges, as though he had been against it from the start.
"Everyone be calm!"
Corlin's voice was hard and level and did no shrinking whatsoever.
"There's someone coming!"
Mahood pointed out into the darkness. Another spark of panic.